things get a little bit grim.
But this is especially heinous.
Did you tell the police that she was murdered, May?
Nope.
Witchy ghost stuff.
Ah! That made me scared.
A spooky girl amateur hour.
My brother came over here with his fiance, and Kara, my middle sister, came over here with her boyfriend, and then Claire was here, and we were all like lounging in this room, and it was so late. It was probably, we didn't get done at the restaurant after the funeral until probably 10 o'clock, 10:30 by the time everybody got back here.
Yeah.
And that's when we just decided to just start chatting, and it was like the first time that all the puzzle pieces got to be together without the parents.
Yes.
And, you know, when you're around your parents, like, you filter. You censor things and you filter things, and it's not a good time to try to just, like, make sense of the past.
Yeah.
So we realized really all four of us have never been in a room like that.
Without the parents.
Without the parents.
It was never just the kiddos.
Never. Not as adults.
Yeah.
So Jill, Aaron's fiance, brought up something crazy that happened in her family, and I just kind of was like, oh, wow, that's crazy. Like, we don't have anything quite like that. And then everybody, like, looked at me, and they were like,
yes, we do.
Yes, we do. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I guess you're right. But then it just became a whirlwind.
Retelling.
Of all of the things that have ever happened. And I think the most shocking one to me was that Kara and Aaron did not know that our dad was married before my mom.
Oh, so, is this the hotel with the...
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, with the races.
Yeah.
So, and Claire brings it up a lot. So I just thought, of course they know about it. It's Claire's favorite story.
Laura was at that wedding.
Yes, she was. And, oh my gosh, to watch Kara and Aaron be like, I'm so sorry. Can we rewind? What wedding? Yes. And it was magical to watch them hear this story for the first time. And then to learn that Laura was at the wedding. Oh, it was just magical. It was so much fun. So I'm really, really glad that that couple of hours got to happen.
Yeah.
And then Aaron and Jill had to leave really early the next day to get back to South Carolina. But, oh my gosh, we had so much family, like, coming in from, like, crazy places. And just everybody was sleeping on blow up mattresses. It was just...
I love that.
It was chaos, but it was good.
How fun. What a delight to have siblings like that yeah, you grew up with.
It was cool. And then the funeral was very nice. I think it was exactly what Grandma would have wanted. Mm-hmm. I did get upset because to get Ryan to dress up is like an Olympic event. You have to practice for it. You have to prepare for it. We have to have a set plan for this. And he was actually very easy to convince.
Oh. And I was like, Miss Congeniality over here.
So we got everything all picked out for what he was going to wear. I was so excited. And then the night before, we were preparing for the next day's events. I was at Laura's with all my aunts and uncles. And all the guys band together and say that they're wearing jeans.
No.
And I was like, if Ryan shows up tomorrow and I don't tell him that everyone else is wearing jeans, I have just shot myself in the foot, because he will once again be like, I told you there would be people wearing jeans there.
Yes.
So I had to come home that night and be like, it would make me very happy for you to wear what we picked out.
However.
But there definitely are going to be people in jeans, and I cannot hold that against you if you don't want to wear what we picked out.
Did he wear jeans?
No, he wore what we picked out.
Good job, Ryan!
I know. I was like, oh my gosh. And I told, like, Laura and my Aunt Lucy that, like, they had to compliment Ryan on his outfit.
Otherwise, he would never do it again.
Right. And I was, so they both were so sweet about it, like, walking up to him. And Lucy just, like, sat down right in front of him and turned around, and she goes, I have to say, you look so nice.
I love Lucy.
I do too. It was very fun.
I hate, it's like such a weird sentiment to be like, what a fun funeral. But like, to like come together and celebrate somebody who has, like, lived a very full and beautiful life and to have the family and laugh and cry. And
yeah.
It's just very cathartic.
Yeah. I've been to worse funerals.
Yes.
Surprisingly.
Yes, we have.
Yeah.
We've been to a lot of the same ones.
Yeah. Yeah. There have been worse ones.
There have been worse ones.
So it was just, I mean, she lived a wonderful life. She raised four, like, beautiful children who turned into wonderful adults.
And amazing raised parents.
More great kids.
Yeah.
And I think that it just, she was very happy to be with her husband who passed away 10 years ago. And that was all she talked about. Like, at the end of her life was like, I just want to be with Herb. Oh. I just want to be.
Herb?
Herbert.
Herbie.
Yeah.
Oh.
And so it was one of those things where, like, she wasn't living her most, like, beautiful life here anymore. It was time for her to go and be with her partner, who they were together for a million years, like 50 years or something like that.
Jeez Louise.
Yeah, they were together for such a long time.
50 years, holy macaroni.
I know. So it was definitely a bittersweet, like, obviously we'll miss her here, and I feel for Laura losing her mom. That is never an easy thing to go through.
It's always hard on the heart.
Yeah.
How's Laura doing?
I think she's doing okay. She's definitely really focusing on the idea that, like, she gets to go be with her dad.
Okay.
And that her mom and dad are now together once again and happy. And I think it was really good for Laura to have her brothers and sisters here that could just kind of be here with her. Because she's the only one that
is here,
lived here, and then our grandma lived here, and all of my aunts and uncles live far away. So
elsewhere.
Like, yes, like Lucy and Jerry live in North Carolina, Carl and Sandy live in Georgia, and then Eric, her oldest brother, lives in Canada.
Oh.
So, like, Laura just has been here, like, really taking care of the day-to-day stuff, and, like, obviously they would help out when they can or when they're here, but I think it was really nice for Laura to have her siblings here to help with planning and everything like that.
How nice.
Yeah. So
what a nice thing to have siblings. Always wanted one.
Yeah. It's a good time.
Yeah.
I kind of want to murder some of them sometimes, but.
That's okay. I feel like that's the price you pay for getting somebody that you love so deeply.
That's true.
Like, anybody who's married, I'm sure, understands that sentiment.
Yeah. 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 You want to murder them, but, like, the wanting to cuddle them overrides that.
Yes. The love overrides the first degree premeditated murder.
The fact that if you murder them, you don't get to cuddle anymore.
So annoying.
Is very annoying factor in here. So how was your week?
It was good. The house is coming together. The renovation is in its, I've said this every day for the past 6 days, but, like, in its final stages.
Right.
We had some, like, minor electrical doo-wops that had to get done, but it's all coming together.
Good.
So a lot of the stuff is unpacked. Most importantly, and this was, like, weighing really heavily on my heart the last time we recorded, my altar was not unpacked.
Sure.
So all of my books, and I never feel like I'm home
mm-hmm.
until my oils and my rocks and my candles and my books are all out and ready for me to play with.
Right. They're such personal items that really a household can function without them.
Yes.
Like, where we can't function without forks and, like, all of the dailies. Things,
like, I have to cook meals for the humans that I love.
Right.
Like, so that was getting done, but it didn't feel like home. And now I can, like, sit on my couch and look around and be like,
I can't wait to see it again.
I'm excited. Maybe, I don't know, maybe tonight we'll go see it. We'll just like
gonna meander.
Just do a little skeet scattle on over.
I had to take a nap when Jenny texted me that she was on her way over. I was dead ass asleep. And I don't normally sleep during the day, but it has been a long week. Good, but long.
Yes.
And yesterday, my friend Jamie and I decided we were going to go see a movie. And then we love to get dinner after the movie so we can talk and talk about the movies, the next movies we want to see. So we decided to go. Ooh, I just hit my mic. Sorry. We went to Arena because we love their wings.
I love Arena. They have good pizza.
Oh, they do have good pizza, but their wings, though.
I don't think I've ever gotten their wings.
They're grilled wings, but you got to get the sweet heat. It is like.
Okay.
To die for.
Okay.
So
I can fuck with a hot honey garlic. Is it like a hot honey garlic?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It doesn't have, it's like the hot and sweet without, like, I don't think it's got too heavy of a garlic taste.
Okay.
But it's phenomenal.
Okay.
So I also had a singular pack of sour Skittles, two White Claws, a basket of wings, and then we decided at 9 o'clock we were going to go get ice cream.
Oh, gosh.
I was up at 12:30 to 3:30 laying on the floor of my bathroom, not sure what was going to happen.
We were having some gastrointestinal distress.
911.
Okay.
I was, oh my gosh, it was horrible.
You, like, don't snickety snack like that.
No, I
like,
don't.
Like, you're like a bowl of popcorn, maybe.
Yeah. Really a bowl of fruit. Like, I really like vegetables. And I've been craving sour Skittles, and I think that might have been what did it, because I texted Jamie this morning, and she was fine.
It's the sour Skittles.
And
something about that citric acid.
Oh, just but I love sour things. Mm. So I was just, like, so excited about my sour Skittles, and I deeply regretted it. So this morning, I definitely woke up. I finished my story this morning, and then I could barely keep my eyes open, and I was like, I have to go take a nap. I will not survive the rest of this day
without one.
So yeah,
so here we are.
Napped,
refreshed,
ready to go,
ready to record a disaster. This might be the first disaster episode that has not started as a disaster.
100%.
Here we are, ready to go.
Look at us go. Are you going first or am I going first?
Well, I accidentally went first twice in a row on folklore and conspiracy. So you went first on cult.
Oh, so do we want to even it out?
I mean, I was thinking that.
Well, you can do whatever you want to do, baby. I do not care. So my disaster kind of ties in with the folklore you did.
Oh, it does?
Yes.
Cool. Okay.
I am doing the Silver Bridge collapse.
Whoa, cool.
Yeah, do you know what folklore?
The last one that I just did?
No.
The dogs of, oh, no. Mothman. Fuck, yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. We actually don't talk about Mothman until the very end. I expected Mothman to make a much
heavier presence
in my research, and he really didn't. Weird how, like, all of this is very scientific, and Mothman was not
a theory.
But without further ado, let's get started. All right, Charlene Wood worked at a hair salon in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, and was on her way home to Gallipolis, Ohio, after her shift on December 15th, 1963. It was a cold night, and it was below freezing. Being December, it would have been really fairly dark at 5:30 p.m. in that area of the country. Charlene was about 5 months pregnant at the time, and the bridge going over the Ohio River connecting Gallipolis and Point Pleasant was called the Silver Bridge. It was packed with people coming and going after work. Everything seemed completely ordinary that evening until Charlene was a little way onto the bridge when she felt it starting to shake.
Uh-oh.
The Silver Bridge was built in 1928 and was named for the color of its aluminum paint. The General Corporation and the American Bridge Company constructed the Silver Bridge. It was a two-lane I-bar suspension type bridge, measuring 2,235 total feet in length, which does include the parts of the road that...
like extend.
Extend.
Okay.
Yes. The bridge was designed under the specifications set forth by the American Society of Civil Engineers, and the Silver Bridge was the first I-bar suspension bridge of its time, or of its type, to be constructed in the United States.
Ooh, fancy boy.
Right. So I will definitely post pictures of what an I-bar chain looks like. To me, they didn't make a lot of sense until I saw a photo of it, and then I was like, oh, got it. I'm going to do my best to explain it. But.
Okay.
I-bar chains are similar to chains in a bicycle. So if you think about the really individual little chains that are a little bar and then two holes at the end and then a pin connects that bar to the next bar, that's what the bridge is like.
Okay.
So think one steel bar with holes drilled in each end and a space so another bar could fit in it and slide together. And then the pin goes through the holes or the eyes of the bars to hold them together. Each chain link consisted of a pair of 2 feet by 12 foot bars and was connected by an 11 foot pin.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's a chunky big bridge.
The length of each chain varied depending on its location on the bridge.
Okay.
The American Bridge Company developed a new heat-treated carbon steel to be used in the construction of the Silver Bridge, and this fancy new steel would allow the individual chain links of the bridge to handle more stress.
Hmm.
So what I'm hearing is that people should just be heat-treated, and then we can handle more stress.
I disagree. I get so mean when I'm hot.
That's true.
Being too warm puts me under great stress.
Can I handle it? They believed that along with the two I-bars sharing the load that would pass over the bridge at any given moment, the steel could handle about a 4 million pound load.
Holy macaroni.
I know. They also had to get crafty with the anchorage design. Bedrock was found too deep below the surface of the river, which made an ordinary gravity-type anchorage impractical. An unusual anchorage was designed consisting of a reinforced concrete trough, 200 feet long and 34 feet wide, filled with soil and reinforced concrete. This really huge trough was supported on a 405 16-inch octagonal reinforced concrete piles, which the cable pull is resided by the weight of the anchorage and by sharing the halves of the piles. So just really long-winded way of saying it supported the whole bridge evenly.
It sounds like a pretty sturdy-ass bridge.
Yeah. And it was.
So when was it constructed?
1928.
Okay.
And it fell in 1963.
Oh, 40 years?
Yeah.
That seems like a short lifespan.
It is. Bridges are supposed to last about 100 years.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What about the Golden Gate Bridge? Shouldn't that sucker be taking a tumble anytime now?
Well, they're supposed to last about 100 years with minimal maintenance and stuff like that.
Okay.
And they can last a lot longer if they're maintained properly.
Okay.
Like the Golden Gate Bridge.
Okay.
Another unique design technique used on the Silver Bridge was the rocker towers. Ugh, this freaks me out. The towers, which had a height of 130 feet, 10 and a fourth inches, allowed the bridge to move due to shifting loads and changes in the chain lengths due to temperature variations.
I love that.
So people were kind of used to the bridge swaying.
No. No, 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 no.
Pass.
Pass on that.
All in all, the bridge seemed stable and would hold for many years. Like I said, most bridges are estimated to withstand about 100 years, more if they're properly inspected and maintained. However, on December 15th, 1963, the bridge began to shake with 37 vehicles crossing the Ohio River.
Oh.
Charlene Wood, the pregnant woman going home from work, had just gotten on the bridge when it started to shake. Immediately, she knew something was wrong, and she threw her car in reverse.
She did?
Mm-hmm.
Smart.
Yep.
Lady, look at those survival instincts.
She was like, peace out.
Boy, bye.
Absolutely not.
Nay, nay.
She was only able to back up a little bit before, like, other cars were lining up behind her.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, it was like someone had lined up dominoes. I could see car lights flashing as they were tumbling into the water. The car in front of me went in, and then there was silence. Witnesses said the bridge bent sharply to the north, cars sliding off of its side. Then there was a groaning sound. It went down in slow motion on top of the sinking vehicles, apparently crushing many of them against the river bottom.
Oh my God. So it's like you didn't even have a chance to try to get out of your car.
No.
This is a good, listen, my mom gave me this tool
mm-hmm.
long ago when I was a kid. That is like a little tiny ice pick
yep.
that you bash on your window and you can break your window out if you were ever underwater.
Yep. There's also a bracelet that people make nowadays that just has a really tiny metal round ball on it. And the bracelet is really stretchy so that you can take it off and pinch it in between like two of your fingers really wide and make a slingshot with the ball and it'll
oh my god
shatter your window.
I feel like you could also like defend yourself against like attackers.
I'll get you with my slingshot. Yeah,
I'm gonna David and Goliath your ass, bud.
Yeah,
I love it.
Charlene's front tires were on the edge of the crack.
Oh
yeah,
back it up, put it in reverse,
staring. Yeah, I cannot imagine how terrified she must have been because she couldn't go back any further. Thank God she got back a little bit.
Could she hop out of her car and run?
I don't know. Maybe.
Okay.
But
sorry, I'm asking you questions like you were there.
I
sit in shotgun with Charlene.
Yeah, let me get my time machine okay. and I will tell you immediately.
Keep going. Keep on with the story.
All right. One eyewitness said that he saw a truck driver standing on top of his truck cab yelling for help as his truck slowly floated downstream in the wintry water.
Oh, God.
William Needham, a truck driver from Kernersville, North Carolina, barely escaped death. He was in the cab of his truck driving across the bridge when the collapse occurred, and he managed to survive, but his partner was in the truck and could not escape. His partner was asleep and was wearing his seatbelt. Needham says the truck sank to the bottom and that he narrowly escaped. He broke the window of the cab, grabbed a box to help him to the surface, and he barely made it to the top of the water before he ran out of breath.
That is so fucking sad.
Yeah. Another survivor, Howard Boggs, lost his wife and a small daughter in the collapse. Mm. He says his wife, Marjorie, noticed that the bridge was quivering as they became stalled on the bridge in the heavy rush hour traffic. And then she said, "What if this thing breaks?" And the next thing Boggs remembers was scrambling for his life by breaking out of the car window.
This is the importance of saying your manifestations.
Yeah.
Your words have power. Don't forget it.
Sadly, his wife and child perished in the accident.
Oh, my God.
He could not aid them in their attempt to be freed from the sinking car. There are many other stories just like this, where there only one person from a family survived the bridge collapse. In all, 31 cars were plunged into the Ohio River. 64 people went in with 31 cars in 44 degree weather.
Oh, my water. God.
Those like Howard Boggs defied the odds. Of the 64 who went in, 46 of them died. The collapse remains the deadliest bridge disaster in U.S. history.
Ew.
Yeah, it's a lot of people. There just wasn't time.
How did this happen?
Let me tell you.
Okay.
So there are many eyewitnesses who immediately jumped into the action to help as many people as they could. Ambulances and rescue units got to the scene within moments. They came from all around, some as far as Charleston.
Wow.
Firemen were shuttled back and forth across the river during the early part of the evening. At about 7:30 p.m., Gallipolis, Ohio County Prosecutor John Epling crossed to West Virginia to begin organizing a cooperative recovery operation between the two states. Later in the evening, Ohio Governor James A. Rhodes and West Virginia Governor Smith arrived at the disaster scene. At about 10:30 p.m., officials agreed to stop operations until daylight.
Mm.
That evening, only 5 bodies were recovered.
That is not nearly enough bodies to be recovered.
Not knowing that 46 of them died.
Oh my God.
Many were stuck in their cars at the bottom of the river. President Lyndon B. Johnson released a statement saying that all Americans were shocked by the cruel tragedy and loss of life. He assembled the Task Force on Bridge Safety to begin a full investigation into the collapse. There were a lot of accounts of people saying that they heard a sonic boom before the collapse. However, that was proven impossible for it to have been a sonic boom. If there was, there would have been damage to buildings as a result of the pressure of that sound.
What the heck is a sonic boom?
It's like when something moves so fast, it creates pressure and it makes a really loud explosion noise.
Lightning.
Yeah.
Lightning and thunder.
Yeah.
Got it.
So if something like that were to have happened, it would have bursted out the windows of the buildings nearby.
Okay.
Nothing had damage that would have said, like, yes, a sonic boom happened.
Okay.
So they assumed that it was just a really loud crack.
Okay.
That people heard.
Like in the bridge?
Mm-hmm.
Ah.
People also believed it was the curse of Chief Cornstalk, a Native American chief who surrendered to a white army in 1774. After he surrendered, he and his son were captured and murdered by the people that they surrendered to. Before he died, he placed a curse on the Point Pleasant area, and the superstition was ruled out.
As he should have.
Right. Forensic analysis was able to trace the problem to a very small stress crack. Around 3 millimeters deep.
What?
In one of the eye bars. In the loop of the eye bar 330.
What?
Yeah. 3 millimeters deep.
How would you even inspect for that?
I have no idea.
I promise you I could not see that with the naked eyeball.
The crack had grown around an impurity in the steel and had been aggravated by the elements and the natural movements of the eye bar along the pin over 39 years of the bridge's use.
Wow.
President Johnson ordered that all bridges of that caliber were to be inspected. The disaster resulted in more rigorous bridge building standards and more scheduled maintenance and inspections. Despite knowing the cause of the collapse, this 3 millimeter crack, people still believe another theory is prevalent. In 1970, the author John Keel popularized the legend that the Mothman, sightings of whom began in 1966, was seen on the bridge near the time of the accident. In the folklore itself, we aren't sure if the sighting of the Mothman was a warning that the bridge was going to collapse, or if Mothman caused the collapse.
Right.
But that is the story of the Silver Bridge collapse.
I hate it.
Yeah,
me That's too. my one of my worst fears.
Bridge collapse?
Is being on it. I won't drive over a bridge with my windows closed.
That's good, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, Ryan will barely drive over a bridge, period.
He wouldn't even go on the Sky Bridge in Chicago.
No. No. Not if we can help it.
No. It's like a heights thing.
Yeah.
Though.
Yeah. For me, it's definitely a, if we go down, we're screwed.
Yeah. I'm a strong, listen, for being like thicker than cold peanut butter, I'm a good swimmer. And because of my body stature, I am naturally buoyant.
Excellent.
So I will just bloop, bloop, bloop right back.
You just like let yourself float.
I just need whoever's coming with me, hold on to my legs. And we'll just.
There we go.
We'll just get up there together. I think of all the natural disasters, volcano, not definitely not making it. Not gonna make it.
But that's so fast.
Yeah. Did you see? There's. Oh, man, I should put this on a grab bag, but I won't. They found this guy, because archaeologists are, like, still working on uncovering Pompeii.
Yeah.
And they found this guy, dead skeleton, fully intact, who survived the blast, but was hit in the noggin by a giant stone, and it pinned him down and killed him.
Oh, my God.
And the stone was still on his noggin when they found him. And I'm sorry, it's the most, I'm so sorry for this man, but, like, that is the most Looney Tunes ass death.
Yes. Like, Wile E. Coyote shit. Like, somebody just, like, plopped an anvil on his head.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh. It was hysterical.
But dang it.
Anyway, moral of the story, I think of all the disasters, I think I could potentially survive a bridge collapse, assuming a giant beam doesn't fall and crush my car as we fall into the water.
Yeah, that's a fear I didn't know I had until I read it. Because, like, falling into the water itself is scary.
Mm-hmm.
I had never even once given a single iota of thought to the rest of the bridge falling on your car.
Yes, that would be problematic to you swimming to the surface.
Yeah.
That would greatly impede progress.
Uh-huh. Or if you get a concussion on the way down.
Yeah. Or, like, the force of... So, like, let's say you're swimming up to the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And the bridge falls into the water, not even on you, but, like, the force of the water
sucks you back down.
Is going to suck you back down.
That's always been a thing of learning about, like, shipwrecks, is that when the ship goes down, it, like, pulls so much water with it.
That you'll get, you better swim away from the boat. Yes. If the boat is going down.
Yeah.
Speaking of different kinds of disasters that you can be in, I have another.
I can't wait.
I like to think of stories as windows and mirrors. So either you see yourself or it transports you to another world you haven't ever seen before.
When you're writing a novel, you can put all your jokes in and then whittle it down until just the best ones are left.
When we're on an airplane, it's one of the few times where we're not super connected. What would happen right now if something terrible happened?
I thought, if I can pull this off, I've done something nobody's ever done. And that's exactly what happened. You can't get more right than Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks.
Hey, everybody. This is Cindy Burnett, and I am the host of the Thoughts from a Page podcast. Several times a week, I interview authors about their latest works. We chat about their covers, their titles, sometimes what inspired them, and always what makes their book stand out. I hope you'll check out my podcast. It can be found on all of the major platforms, including Apple and Spotify. Thanks so much.
As the last installment
in the Wild West
thing. In the Wild West sequility.
Is that a thing?
Series? Yeah, it'd be quadrilogy, pentrilogy.
I didn't even know if it went.
Sequilogy.
I have never learned past octilogy, trilogy.
Non-ilogy, decilogy. Yeah. Anyway, I'm really good with my antonyms and... Anyway, moral of the story is I will never do this to myself again.
Okay.
Unless, like, somebody out there really enjoyed it, like, you're going to have to beg me. Never again. I thought it was going to be fun. I was wrong.
Hey, we gave it a shot.
We gave it a shot.
Proud of you for going for it.
Thank you. But I am going to close it out. I thought about giving up. Thanks to you. I did not.
You got this. I was like, one more, Ginny.
What? You can do it. 5 out of 6, you can do it. Okay, so this story first appeared in the October 2011 issue of Our State, which is a publication that comes out of the state that this happens in.
All right.
Written by Karen Myers. And some good Wikipedia facts and all that.
Excellent.
All the regular, schmegular stuff. So, two trains pulled out of Charlotte in the early morning hours of October 29th, 1901. A turn of the century.
Ooh.
Heading north on the Southern Railway. On them, members of Buffalo Bill's Wild West show, having just entertained more than 30,000 spectators in Queen City, rolled north. That's so many people.
How did they get the word out?
Telegraph? I don't know. Do they have telegraph? Yeah, they did.
Yeah. How do we get...
Carrier pigeons.
I don't
understand. You send
turn of the century communication.
A convoy. You send the Pony Express 2 weeks ahead of you.
Right.
And just be like, go pass these handwritten flyers around.
You know what I would never have survived living in another time? Would be if... I think about this all the time in Hamilton when Eliza is so excited about Angelica coming to... the United States to spend time, the time that it would take that letter to get from her to her sister to say, come spend the summer with us, for Angelica to be like, yeah, let me do that. Send that letter back. And then for her to be like, I'm going to arrive most likely between August 1st and August 15th.
That's a long window.
Like, could you even give a specific day?
The fuck no.
I have so many
somebody
questions.
Could get dysentery.
Right.
Something could go. If your horse caught a cold, you're not
so
getting anywhere.
So many things that could happen. And you can't just whip out your phone and be like, hey, I'm going to be a little late.
When did we have cars?
Late 1800s.
Really?
I think. The Model Ford.
Okay. When did we get those big goofy bicycles with the giant front wheel?
Unicycles?
No. They have two wheels.
Oh.
But it's like one giant front wheel and like one teeny tiny.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I don't know when they have that.
I love those. Anyway, so yes, they got the word out somehow to 30,000 people. And
they all showed up.
They all showed up and watched it in Queen City. And the train was rolling north towards Virginia.
Okay.
Danville was to be the final show of the season, but one of the trains never made it out of North Carolina. Under a full moon, the lead train carrying Colonel William Buffalo Bill Cody and his own private Pullman car moved swiftly towards Lexington. A second train filled with animals, roustabouts, and one of the show's stars, Annie Oakley, departed later and lagged behind. Roughly 65 miles north of Charlotte, Southern Railway Engine 75 chugged out of the Lexington station heading south with a load of shit.
Uh-oh.
It was literally what was on the train. Poop.
Great.
Animal poops.
Why are we carrying that?
Fertilizer.
Okay.
Southern Railway's main line was a single track in 1901. As Buffalo Bill's trains headed north, the freight train's engineer, Frank Lynch, received a telegraph message ordering him to let the show trains pass. Lynch followed the order and pulled onto a sidetrack, but he missed one critical detail. The Wild West show traveled on two trains. After the first show train passed through Lexington, Lynch eased his locomotive back onto the main line. The engine picked up speed, traveling at about 45 miles per hour. As he rounded a curve, Lynch saw a sickening sight, a headlight charging towards him.
Oh, God!
The second show train, with engineer Bud Rollins at the helm, was traveling too fast to avoid the inevitable. Emergency brakes squealed and sparks flashed as steel grated against the iron rails. Both crews jumped clear of the impending crash. Seconds later, near the old red mill flour and a half in old red flour mill, 4.5 miles south of Lexington, the trains collided.
Oh my God.
Impact knocked some of the show train's 5 cars into Swearing Creek. Others lay gnarled in a jagged heap of metal in a cornfield owned by Linwood resident Wesley Young. In an instant, a single human error sent hundreds of show horses and exotic animals to their death and sidelined one of the greatest spectator shows in American history. It's like the OG circus.
Yeah.
Oscar Sisk, a retired railway man, came to the scene to help. He described for the Salisbury Post, a local paper, what he saw. 2 engines seemed to have tried to devour each other. One had run halfway inside the other, and then they reared up on the tracks like 2 giant beasts in deadly combat. All the cars on both trains were made of wood and were shattered into thousands of pieces upon impact. Mm. No people died in the crash.
Oh, wow. That's shocking. Thank God.
Yes. But Cody's show suffered catastrophic losses. Among the 110 horses that died, 2 were the showman's personal mounts, Old Pap and Old Eagle.
Oh, God.
Along with 2 stallions he received as a gift from Queen Victoria.
Aww.
Only 2 horses survived the crash. So there were 112 horses and 2 survived.
Two. That's not great odds.
No, it's not great odds. But one of the horses that survived was named Duke. Okay. It was Cody's favorite.
Oh, Duke.
I know. When Cody arrived at the scene, eyewitnesses say he blinked back tears as he told his men to get their guns and do what we have to do.
Oh.
One account says he pursued some of the freight train crew with his gun drawn. Railroad reports show Lynch made his way to Salisbury, where he hitched a ride on a train bound for parts unknown and escaped into anonymity.
Wow.
So, that yahoo.
Yeah.
It's assumed that he was, like, drinking on the job and wasn't listening to directions, and then he just, like, bounced out.
Fade to black.
Seriously. Yeah, fading, backing away into the bushes. He was never found or brought to justice.
Wow.
So, but among the calamity, the importance of human kindness shines through.
Prevails.
When Wesley Youngs, who's the farmer of the field that they landed in, his 19-year-old daughter, Belle, heard the crash, she grabbed her younger sister, Minnie, and ran down the road to the creek. As soon as she saw the disaster, they ran back and roused the rest of the family to help. In the hours after the accident, the Young family went into action. Mrs. Young used the family's bed sheets to make bandages. She also sent Belle and Minnie to the neighbors to ask for flour. Retrieving hams from the smokehouse, Mrs. Young cooked for the group, making biscuits with 100 pounds of borrowed flour.
Oh my God.
And serving meat and eggs and vegetables until they straight ran out of food.
Holy God. That's amazing.
100 pounds of flour.
How many biscuits?
That's about, you can probably get 8 dozen biscuits out of 1 bag of flour.
Mm-hmm.
So, what's 8,000 biscuits?
That's so many.
That math doesn't add up, but I'm going to stand by that. Probably about 8,000 biscuits.
Do you want me to do it real quick?
So, 2,400 biscuits.
Okay. So, not quite 8,000.
Not quite 8,000. But still, that's a heck of a lot of biscuits.
That's a lot of biscuits.
How are you cooking those biscuits?
Oof.
Anyway, so, by morning, word of the great train wreck spread throughout Piedmont and crowds began to gather. Onlookers later described the aftermath as a scene from a Western movie. Cowboys, some still dressed in their show regalia, herded buffalo into a nearby pasture.
Oh my gosh.
In an article published on the anniversary of the accident in 1961, the then 72-year-old Willie Cox told the Salisbury Post what he remembered of the accident. There were saddles, bridles, costumes, and other show equipment that had washed down the creek and were being gathered up and carried away by residents of the area. Cox said Cody's first concern was for the show people. According to the Post article, Cody asked his storekeeper in Linwood to estimate the value of his entire stock, and then he purchased it and turned it over to those who played cowboys and Native Americans in the show.
Aww.
It was quite a show for the people of Linwood, recalled Cox, who was 12 at the time of the accident. Indians and cowboys camped in a pasture near the Linwood Railroad Station and walked back and forth to the store, carrying goods to the camp. Buffalo horses and cattle that survived the wreck were pastured near Linwood for several weeks. Wesley Young and his family helped Cody and his crew in whatever way they could. In addition to feeding the group and pasturing animals, the Youngs also put show members up in their barns overnight. Cody was grateful and gave one of the surviving horses, Shoe Fly, to Wesley Young. Belle and Minnie told members of their church that it was the fastest horse their father ever owned.
Aww.
The accident was not only a tragedy, but also one of the most dramatic events ever to shake the Linwood area. Belle Young, who lived to be 99, was known to regale her friends and family members with stories of the accident and the days that followed. She told the Post in 1961, "We had a big time back then, I reckon. Got to know them all. They stayed there for a good little bit." Buffalo Bill's Wild West show eventually returned to performance arenas, but it never fully recovered from the train wreck. Annie Oakley, who was asleep when the accident spilled her car into a swamp on the north side of the track, was thrown from her bed and suffered extensive injuries. Early newspaper reports actually announced that she was dead.
Oh, geez.
Mm-hmm. In a biography of Annie Oakley, Isabel S. Sayers wrote that her husband, Frank Butler, carried Annie Oakley, his injured wife, to a rail car that workers set up as a temporary hospital. She next went to a hospital in Winston-Salem, where she received treatment for her injuries, including paralysis. Only after several surgeries and months of convalescence in a New York hospital did Oakley resume performing. Although she and Cody remained friends, the train wreck marked the end of her association with Buffalo Bill's Wild West show. At the time of the accident, Oakley and Butler had been with the show for 16 years.
Holy moly!
In a letter to a friend, she wrote that the stress of the train wreck caused her hair to turn white overnight.
Oh my god.
Oakley and Butler, a skilled marksman in his own right, moved to Pinehurst in 1915 and lived at the Carolina Hotel, where they taught hundreds of women the arts of marksmanship and gave exhibitions on and off for the next 7 years. In spite of her injuries, Oakley's sure shot expertise did not wane, and she continued to set records. In a 1922 competition, at the age of 62 years old, she hit 100 clay targets from 16 yards away.
Jesus.
She's amazing.
Wow.
Cody sued the Southern Railway, and the court ordered the company to pay him $65,000 in damages. The canceled show in Danville, Virginia, cost Cody $10,000 in lost ticket sales, which was money he would never recoup. For nearly 20 years, the show struggled. Finally, in 1913, Cody turned the Wild West show over to creditors. Until the day he died, Buffalo Bill Cody viewed the Linwood accident as a calamity that forever changed his life, leaving an indelible mark on the world's greatest showman, as well as the families who lived in central Davidson County.
Wow, I had no idea about this. Until I was looking up stuff.
Yeah, I'd never heard of it.
I had never heard of that.
Mm-mm. It's so sad.
And I didn't look into it. I just saw, like, the title of it and sent it to you and was like, this one
here,
maybe.
Here you go. Try this.
Try.
Google it. See what it's about. It's a lot better than my original idea, which I will do in a later episode, but we're going to give it a break.
A breather.
We're going to give it a breather for a while. Things are getting a little hot and heavy there.
Yeah, I think the original plan will be a good disaster topic in the future, for sure.
Later down the road.
Yeah.
Yeah. So wow. That is the story. It's so sad. And it's like, even though there were no deaths, like, there were so many lives that were impacted by that. And those poor horses.
I know. I think about every time I drive down a highway and see a tractor trailer with horses in it, I'm like, oh God, I hope you don't ever get into an accident. Like,
it makes me so scared for the horses, because, like, they're just in, like, a metal tin can with slots.
Yeah.
Like, isn't that hot? Do you have a fan in there? Is it climate control? Do they have hay? Do they have water?
Right.
I just am nervous.
We got a lot of questions.
Did you give it Dramamine?
Right. Is he seasick?
Can horses throw up?
I'm sure they can.
Can they?
I don't know.
I'm going to Google it.
All right. Google it.
I'm going to Google it.
And then I need to tell you my dream that I had yesterday.
Oh my gosh, tell me.
Okay. So, I have wild dreams when I nap, which is part of the reason why I don't typically nap. But like I said, long week, naps have had to happen.
Horses cannot throw up.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. They have a very strong esophageal sphincter. Ooh. Oh, esophageal.
Esophageal, is that what you said?
Esophageal sphincter. Esophageal.
Oh my God, Jenny.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Anyway, okay. Sorry. The crazy dream.
Okay, yeah. So, I... my dream started out with, I was watching Your Tiny Human,
mm-hmm.
Theo. I don't know why, but he and I were hanging out, and he was, I don't know what he was doing, but I was like, I'm gonna go walk around the house.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys lived in a log cabin.
Yeah.
But it was really, really pretty, and it was... kind of, it was up like a paved path. It had like a really big driveway, and I could see like down like a hill.
Okay.
And I was walking around the house, and it started pouring down rain when I was walking around the house. And so I was running to the front door again, and I got like, I was definitely very afraid. Like I was like, oh my God, I have to get to Theo. And I looked down and I could see a giant tail like in the corner of my eye, but it was a hill that I had to look down, and there was a cement like column that was kind of impeding my view.
Okay.
So I had to like walk around the column, and it was a giant coyote. And but like think Twilight level size wolf.
Okay.
Coyote.
Okay.
Okay.
Ew.
And I didn't want to turn my back on it. And it was definitely, like, hunting something. It was, like, low to the ground and kind of, like, stalking. And okay. I was like, oh, God. So I got down below the cement thing and peeked back up. And it was – it had transformed into a woman. But the woman still had a lot of coyote features.
Okay.
It looked like she was almost in a coyote costume.
Oh.
At that point. And I was like, okay, this is weird. But I walked back up to the house, and at this point, like, I wasn't afraid for Theo anymore. I was just like, this is very weird.
Yeah.
And I saw that there was a big, it looked almost like a tractor trailer that you put horses in.
Okay.
But it was red. And I was like, what is this? And Ian was directing people to put things in this tractor trailer. And I was like, what in the world? And I go around the tractor, and there are dead bears everywhere.
What?
And I look on the side of this tractor trailer, and it says dead animal, dead animal reanimation.
What?
And I was like, huh? And he was like, yeah, don't worry about it. They'll be back alive soon.
Huh?
And he was like, get in the cab. And I was like, okay.
Okay.
I'm, at this point, I'm just not asking any questions.
You're just going with the flow.
Yeah, and we start driving, but I was mad at him because he was driving backwards. And I remember, like, being like, why are we driving backwards? Just drive forward. But he was just laughing at me. And then we went to this really, really big Victorian home.
Ooh.
And suddenly Ian was gone, and I was just, like, on my own again.
Mm-hmm.
And I walk upstairs, and you were there with a bunch of other women that I didn't know.
Okay.
And it was clearly like time for a seance. Like we had a round table. There was like a crystal ball. And
it's very clearly time for some witchy shit.
Yes. And you come over to me and you were like, you're not allowed to wear pink. And I was like, what?
And on Wednesdays, we were black.
Right. And I looked down and I have like a pink shawl on. And you're like, you're going to have to change. But everything else was in the room was like a shade of pink. It looked like everything was like rose colored.
Oh.
And I was like, I'm so confused.
I'm so sorry that I treated you this way.
Well, and then I was like, what are we doing? And you were like, this is the business. We're reanimating all of those bears. And what? I was like, what? And that's when I woke up.
Just some casual necromancy.
Yeah.
I love that.
I woke up and I was running late. And so I couldn't, I did not have enough time to type out the entire dream.
Let me read exactly what you sent me because it boggled my mind. For quite a while.
I realized later that I could have definitely sent this to anybody but Jenny.
She said, I have to tell you about a dream I had. Keywords. Theo. Too much rain. Log cabin. Ian's new business. Dead animal seance. Coyotes. I said, What? And she said, I took a nap. I'm running late now. I'll tell you later. Okay. All right. I was a little freaked out because we are leaving this Friday to go stay in a log cabin in Nashville or in Tennessee.
I saw that text and I was like, I don't have time to explain like the reasons why I don't think that that's a big deal. But
just it's fine.
Right. How long are you guys going to be gone?
It's a little to and fro. Listen, we're doing the heckin' jellyfish plan.
Okay.
We're probably going to be back like late Monday.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. So anywhere between like 3 days and a week. We'll see.
Okay.
Probably not a week.
Hopefully closer to 3 days because we don't have enough episodes recorded.
No, probably not. No, probably not. Yeah, we'll be back. I can't. It's hard to get Ian to take time off of work. So
I get it.
Yeah. It's what happens when you're trying to like grow your own business.
Yeah.
So that is the story.
Yeah.
What's your bright and shiny? Do you have a bright and shiny?
I do. My bright and shiny is just having a family that feels like family.
Aww.
And I had a very crazy, tumultuous childhood where I didn't always have that. And this week I just was able to feel like a part of the puzzle piece and be like, these are my family. This is my family. These are my siblings. And it doesn't matter where we came from or how we fit together.
It's your clan.
Yeah. So it was just really sweet. And that is my bright and shiny. What about you?
I went to Lowe's and I bought just a whole bunch of plants.
Yay!
And it made Ian crazy, but he was so kind. And he just, like, pushed the little cart behind me as I'm, like, grabbing plants off the shelves. And, like, I was talking to them and just having like a grand old time. And the cashier kind of made fun of me and Ian made fun of me. But you know what? I was just like, I don't care.
I don't care about it.
I literally don't care. The only sad thing is I cannot find, I'm on the hunt for a string of pearls succulent.
Okay.
And I cannot find it anywhere. And I don't want to order it online because, like, I want to know that it came from, like, a house with love.
Yeah.
And it, like, was cared for.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, that was.
If anybody has, like, a string of pearls and it's, like, ready to be, like, propagated, let your girl know.
Yeah.
Send me a DM. Send me a DM on Twitter. Or DM Taylor on Instagram.
Yeah, we'll get it connected.
Yeah.
That was me last year with lemon balm. I could not find lemon balm anywhere, and I was desperate for it.
Yeah.
And I finally found it at Walmart.
There you go. I do not believe that they will have string of pearls at Walmart, but I'm going to keep my eye out. I've checked Walmart. I've checked Lowe's. I've checked Menards.
Have you checked the Honey Pot downtown?
I have not because they have some like, I'm not trying to like ridicule. It's like a human running a business.
Yeah.
Their store hours in my life rarely coincide.
Yeah.
So I'm either there like 45 minutes too late or like 3 hours early.
Dang it.
I know.
Yeah. That doesn't work.
No.
Well, you'll find it. It'll manifest it.
It will come to me when it's ready.
Yeah.
That's my new affirmation, actually.
It'll come to me when it's ready.
I do not chase, I attract, and what is intended for me will find me.
I love that.
Thanks. It's actually been making my heart feel really light, so.
Good.
Yeah. So, thanks for listening.
Yeah. Send in your spooky stories to alittlebitgrim@gmail.com, or you can visit our website and send it directly from there.
We have merch if you like merch.
Yeah. Follow us on Instagram. Follow us on Twitter. You can join our Facebook group.
Leave us a review. It really helps us out, like small little pods like us.
Yeah. And it also makes our hearts happy, which is really important.
Give us something to screenshot and send to each other and talk about all day.
Because we love doing that.
We do. It's our favorite thing. I hope you have an amazing weekend.
Yes. And be kind to yourself.
And to others.
Goodbye.